speaker all the way from Seal Beach, Rosie T. Let's give her a big welcome from our South County group.
Thank you, Brenda, for that. And thank you, Annette, for the invitation. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Rosie, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you very much for the invitation again. And thank you, Frank, for the one song I got to hear. I didn't get to hear the other one, but thank you very much. That was different. That was my first 10-minute pitch that I hear through a song. So thank you very much for that. Before I begin, I'd like to welcome the newcomers that identify tonight and those who didn't identify. I sincerely hope you get to hear something that'll keep you coming back.
Thank you.
I want to thank all the techies out there for all the support that we've gotten and all the help with all the changes. I would like to remind myself and remind the group as a whole to guard our anonymity, to be informed about the changes that are happening in our lives, and to continue to teach the newcomer anonymity, and let us not forget our primary purpose. I am using this venue to remind not only you guys, but to remind myself as well. I find that for me, it's very easy to get complacent, and I'm needing to work overtime to just get a little bit of the energy and the spirit that we normally get when we're together in the room and we feel each other's presence and hugs and handshakes. I can tell you that I will never take that for granted. I am here to share with you guys how I drank. What got me to AA and what I'm like today. I started drinking at the age of 16. That is weird to see the screen moving. Anyway, I'm going to try to focus here. And I started drinking at 16 years old, not because I needed to take a drink, but because my buddy Alex had a bottle of vodka and he was sitting next to me on the bus on our way to high school. And I count that as my first drunk, not my first drink, but certainly it's the drunk that I mark as my first one. I got sick, I puked. Hey, is it okay to ask the, I don't know, but I have the screen of the recovery home and there's a lot of movement and I'm getting all, is there a way that we can blank them?
What's the name of it?
See you.
If you just want to see your face, click pin video and then choose yourself.
Okay. Do what?
There's a thing that says pin video.
Pin video. That's okay. I don't see it. I have you on my screen and that's fine now.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. There was just a lot of movement. How long do I talk for? Do you know, Brenda? Frank, do you know how long do I go for?
45 minutes.
Okay.
You can sure wrap it up about five after.
Five after. Okay. That gives me about 30 minutes. Okay. So I'm drunk in the bus on my way to high school with my buddy Alex. And that's my first drunk and the drunk that I started to puke. And this is in high school. And I can tell you that I love the effect produced by alcohol. I love what it did for me and to me. I had a great time with alcohol and for a lot of years. This was during high school. I've always worked since I'm 14 years old. So I've always had a couple of bucks in my pocket. I've always had a bag of weed on me. I had the bottle of vodka in my locker. And I am one of those drunks that really never got into a lot of trouble. I never got caught in school. I never got caught DUI, thank God. And so for me, I had a really good time. I found drugs early on as well. Drinking was a constant in my life all throughout my life, ever since I can remember until my last drunk. And so during my high school years, there was a lot of cutting class, a lot of parties. I'm the kind of drunk that likes to party and people and go out, and I can start a party with anybody in a parking lot. I can start a party in the bathroom, and, you know, just you name it, I'm there. I'm not a stay home drunk. I'm not a closet drinker. And so my earliest recollection, when I was 19 years old, I had an overdose. So I had to quit doing drugs. And what happened to me as a result from that is that I only drank. I only drank from the ages of 19 to about 25. And when you don't have anything to enhance your drinking, you're going to go straight into blackouts. And that's what happened to me. I didn't call them blackouts then. I don't even remember talking about them. I don't remember, you know, calling people up and saying, you know, hey, what did I do, you know, last night? So for me, it was just part of the deal. I remember being afraid when I would come to in places that I should have never been, with people I should have never been with. I remember that just the coming to unknown places was just scary enough for me, but not scary enough to like not drink and drive. You know, that I don't remember ever nothing happening to me that scared me enough to think, gee, I better not drink, or I better watch it. I know that when I didn't have the alcohol enhancers, is what I call them, my uppers that allow me to drink more, I was a messy drunk. And looking back through inventories, I come to realize that I've had a lot of angels in my life. I had a lot of people taking care of me from the very beginning. I am talking, you know, showing up to work with clusters of pizza on my sweater because pizza and Grand Marnier don't mix well. And I had people cleaning me up. I had people hiding me from my bosses. Even the narc in high school, you know, I mean, he took a liking to us. There was a group of us. And I knew he knew. I mean, we were cutting class all the time. We would see him in the park. And we never got in trouble. And so what happened to me at the age around 25 years old, and I believe, looking back through inventory, I believe that because I continue to hang around with the same crowd and the same people in the same playgrounds, I picked up drugs again. And for me, the ages of 25 to 29, I hope and I pray that I have lived what I call my bottom. And here in AA, we talk a lot about bottoms. You know, we talk about, you know, high bottoms and low bottoms. And the reality of things is that if it's a bottom when you say it is, you know, I mean, some of us have had to dig, you know, deeper. But for me, I quickly shacked up with a drug dealer guy that I was hanging out with. I didn't like him, you guys. The guy was not even good looking. Well, he was kind of ugly, if you want to know the truth. I mean, it wasn't like that he was not good looking. I mean, he was, I don't know what happened to me there, but I can tell you that that it was pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I did not like this guy. He was married. He was supposed to be unmarried. You know how the story goes. And I ended up staying in this, I don't call it a relationship. I'm trying to, in recovery and through all the step taking and the honesty and the sponsorship, I'm trying to name things what they are. This was not a relationship, even though I called it a relationship. But this was, you know, him in and out of my life. Me trying to, you know, beg him to stay and leave the wife. Me calling the wife. I was one of them. And for me, during this time, I crashed. And the way that that looked for me, I had lost a good job. I'm a bookkeeper by trade. And I had lost a good job, and I ended up working at a ballroom hostess place in downtown LA. My job there was from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And it was to answer the phones, hiring the women that work there at night. And this place, I call it the dungeon. It's still there. It's in on 7th and Hill, it's underground. Well, I don't know if it's still there now, but the carpet stuck to your feet. The fine smell of pine sole was in the air. It was infected with mice and roaches, and I worked there and I scored my dope there and I drank there every day. And for my last 3 years out there, that's where I ended up. And I can tell you that it was only 20 minutes away from downtown LA to where I lived. I lived in Downey, on Old River School in Florence, across the street, two liquor stores. And I could not make the drive of 20 minutes without having to pull on the side of the freeway to take a pull from the bottle or a line or whatever it is that I was using. I couldn't go 20 minutes without it. And it wasn't that this was once in a while. This is how I lived. When I think about it and I go there, and I talk a lot about what I used to drink like, because I've been blessed with sponsorship and talking to newcomers a lot. And so I remember because I tell my story often. And I can tell you that I remember how I lived in that apartment. You know, this is where, you know, I would get drunk. I would shut down the curtains and unplug the phone. And it was all that drama. You know, it was all the mariachi music. And it was all about poor me, you know, pour me another drink. And it was about me sneaking around, you know, looking to see where this guy was going. The fun had left. You know, I remember going to the nightclub and it was not the same anymore. and so this is where I was when I hit the bottom. It was November of 1991. I went to nightclubs between the ages of 19 and 25. I forgot to tell you guys that I would go to the nightclubs 4 or 5 nights a week. You know, my car drove me to different nightclubs, different times, you know, all by itself. I didn't have to drive. And I would get home at 1:30 in the morning. I would get up at 5, go to the gym, go to work, go visit my mom because I'm a good daughter. I would go to the college. I would go to the nightclub, get home at 1, get up at 5. Because if you went to the gym, everything is okay. You see, I'm all over that chapter 3 where it talks about, you know, working out more and exercising and then reading inspirational books. And, you know, I even went to volunteer at a community service without having to go there. I went volunteer. I was seeking something. I just didn't know what I was seeking. And if you would have said that I had alcoholism or if alcohol was my problem, I would have said no way. You know, I never, before getting to you guys, did I see that alcohol was my problem. My problem was always drugs. And so what happened, you know, in November of 1991, is my brother had gotten back from Nicaragua and I had just gotten back from Ecuador, and I brought back some sugar cane syrupy homemade alcohol. And my brother brought home some rum, and and we started drinking on a Sunday. I know it was a Sunday because I ended up at Stephen's Steakhouse. And so Stephen's Steakhouse on a Sunday night, my car drove me there all by itself. And my brother totaled his van that night. He left my house at 9:30 at night. I don't think anything about him leaving. My mother always used to say, you know, my brother drove better when drinking. We would go to these campouts on this beautiful van he had. And his van was worth about $45,000. And we used to take these camping trips and, you know, my brother would be driving and my mom would be, you know, hey, give Mario another beer. He's falling asleep. And this is how it was. We all knew my brother drove better when drinking. So that Sunday night in November of 1991, when he got up to leave, I don't think anything of it. You know, I think that he's going home. And I went to the nightclub and he hit the center divider with his van that night. He hit the wall on the right and hit the center divider and lost the directional of the wheel. The wheel came up and hit him. And my brother ended up alive and walking away from that car wreck. And the following morning, he called me and he asked me if I would go with him to pick up the van, you know. And so I said, of course, you know. And we went to pick up the van and we came home with $50 on the back seat of that van. And when I saw the van and I saw my brother, I couldn't believe that he had walked away from that car wreck. Today, I know why he walked away from that car wreck. But that day, when I took that picture of the van, I looked at my brother and he walked away with the burn from the seatbelt and a swollen chin from that wheel hitting him up. And I just thought to myself, wow, you know. And so my brother got sentenced to go to AA. He got a DUI that night. And so he got sentenced to go to AA, and he didn't stay sober that Christmas or that New Year's Eve, but around January, he started going to AA. His sobriety date is February 5th of 1992. And I believe him to be sober today. He says he's sober. But so this is 27 years ago. 27 years ago, this past February, 28 years for him. So what happened, you guys, is that he starts calling me at this looser job that I had, where all I had to do was answer phone calls, you know, all day long. And looking back, I know that this is seconds and inches, because if I would have worked anywhere else, I wouldn't have been able to pick up my brother's daily morning phone calls. He would call me after his morning attitude adjustment meeting. And he said, he would say to me, "These people are crazy." You know, his first meeting that he went to, he goes, "I'm not going back to AA. I'm going to find somebody to sign my court card. You know, are you interested? I'll pay you." And I had no idea what he was talking about, you know. And my brother tells the story, because I don't remember talking to my brother about this, but he tells the story. He says, "I told him that I had heard Alcoholics Anonymous worked." And I don't know why I would say that, because I have never been to AA. All I've heard of AA was Sarah T and My Name is Alice, when back in the day in junior high. And my brother said that I also told him to, that I reminded him that he always walked around saying that he was a drunk. My brother would drink and he would walk around saying, "I'm an alcoholic, you know, and I'm a drunk." And he said that I reminded him of all that morning. And he came back to AA, and he went to his second meeting, his third meeting, and after the third meeting, you had him. My brother became your biggest cheerleader, and he couldn't wait to tell me about it. You know, he would come and call me every morning after his morning attitude adjustment meeting and tell me all about you. He started sharing with me how he drank, how he felt, and all the blackouts and everything that had happened to him. And I wanted to tell him where I was. I wanted to tell him, you know, "Hey, you know, I'm checked up with this guy that I don't even like, you know, and I'm selling drugs. I'm using drugs on a daily basis. I wanted to tell him I'm drinking every day. I'm drinking right now, and it's the morning." I wanted to tell him all that, and the words never came out. And I come from a household, I'm the youngest of seven, where we're not used to talking about anything that matters, anything that's intimate, any truths, you know, everything that's bad, we sort of like, you know, sweep it underneath the carpet. You know, we never really talk about anything that matters. And so I was not about to tell my brother. I wanted to, but I couldn't. And so my brother, you know, started, he came home and gave all the girls, the world sisters, he's the only brother, and he gave us all big books, you know, and then he started talking about God. And it was "God this, God that." We started calling him Brother Mario, you know, and we used to mock him. And, you know, he would come in through one door and we would be, you know, laughing and exiting the other door. And this is how it was, you know, with him. And so what happened is that he took a trip. And before he took a trip, he said, "You had to go and give Alcoholics Anonymous a chance. You know, go to a meeting and try to pick up a directory. And in a directory, you will find the listing of all the meetings in your area." And so what happened was he took that trip and I ended up missing you. I missed hearing about you. I missed hearing the stories. You know, my brother had a lot of horror stories and I was there. I mean, I grew up with my brother. I knew how he drank. And I started reminding myself about how I was drinking while he was sharing. And so he took that trip and I ended up, you know, missing. You guys call it the language of the heart here. And I had no idea, you know. And I showed up on a Tuesday night in Downey. Downey, that's where I got sober. And I showed up on a Tuesday night to the Second Chance meeting. And I remember waiting outside your meeting, you know, for the meeting to get over, because I felt strange going into the meeting. You know, it was across the street, the Guardsman, where I drank. I drank at that bar a lot. And I don't know, in my head, I kept thinking, maybe somebody from the bar is going to watch me go into a meeting of AA, you know, and, you know, like that's all that mattered. Like they were waiting for me to go in. I don't know what I was thinking, but I remember waiting for the meeting to be over. And I went after the meeting to the literature table where my brother said to pick up a directory. And there she was. Her name is Marguerite. You know, she left AA early on, a long time ago. I don't know that she's drunk, but I know that she doesn't go to AA. But she was there that night doing her commitment. after the meeting. I don't know about you guys, but you know, who stays after the meeting, you know? And she was standing there at the literature table, and I asked her for a directory, and she got all excited. I paid $5, you know, I took out $5 and I gave her $5 because I knew you poor people needed the money, you know, and this is the kind of thinking I brought in with you guys, you know, I came in with no toenails and bloated 160 pounds. And I can tell you that that's a vision for you. You know, this is way before acrylics. You know, I was going to go dancing, you know, and I had my little black leather mini skirt, my hi-fi boots, my tube top, I'm ready to go. And so I ended up looking around, and there was this beautiful ladies there with the little beehive hairdo and nice jewelry. And I already told you how I looked. And so I thought that this was another place I didn't belong. And I remember, you know, looking at the directory and finding another meeting. I thought you guys only went to Tuesday night meetings. So I went to a Tuesday night at the Ignore Walk, which is only 5 minutes from where I was. And it's called the Hoxie meeting. It was a biker meeting. And in this meeting, there were, you know, a lot of bikers and a lot of people with tattoos and, you know, and I remember sitting there for a minute. I thought, this bunch looks like they need help. And so I stayed, you know. It doesn't matter why you're here. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're going to hear something that's going to hopefully a little chunk of your story. You know, we talk a lot about identification and our primary purpose. This is our primary purpose. One drunk talking to another drunk. And you know, for whatever reason, you guys, I came thinking that I was going to be helpful to you guys. You know, here I am dying of alcoholism, completely addicted to drugs, completely a drunk. I'm drinking in the morning. I'm drinking on a daily basis. I'm selling drugs. Even visiting my family was something that I dreaded because I felt that everybody can tell that I was a bundle of nerves and panic and anxiety, and I would sweat if I would have 2 beers, you know, at home. I didn't know if I was going to have more beers. I had to go, and it was always so uncomfortable for me to try to control and enjoy my drinking. And so what happened at that Hoxie meeting, you guys, is that I sat there for a minute, and there's this treasurer guy that came in, and he said he had gone to prison. And I remember thinking, wow, man, you people are dumb. You have the guy that went to prison taking your money, you know? And I'm thinking, see, I know you guys need me, you know? I mean, it's obvious to me. And thank God for old timers in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that they don't wait to be asked for anything. And I hope I get to be that trusted servant too. You know, that I don't have to wait for anybody to ask me to move around and work the room and find that newcomer. I hope the Zoom meetings don't last long. I hope that our meetings are established because I can't wait to see your eyeballs to eyeballs. And so what happened is that these old timers, they just took a hold of me and they gave me a commitment of coffee. And then in my head, I'm still thinking, you need me. This is why you're asking me to do coffee, you know? And I made coffee for a couple of weeks, and, you know, somebody must have found out I was a bookkeeper by trade. Again, this is all in my head because you gave me the secretary commitment. And then I took your binder and I cleaned it up and I color coded it. I intuitively knew you wanted me to handle to audit that guy that been to prison, that he was still your treasurer, you know? And so I would watch the receipts and watch the basket and watch him. And in my head, I'm thinking, you were keeping my brother sober. The least I can do is come and help you guys out. You know, this is, I swear to God, I didn't think, oh, I'm an alcoholic. This is the last house on the block. Oh, I didn't think I'm desperate. I need your help. I came under the delusion that I was helping you. This is why it doesn't matter why you're here. If you're here, this is the easier, softer way. I came to you guys not knowing anything about alcoholism. I came to you guys in full flight from reality. Full flight from reality. The doctor's opinion describes me to a T. It says that I'm a mental, right out mental defective, it says. You know, and the reason why I was in full flight from reality and I know it to the gut is because I had no idea. You know, it's easy for me to share my story, you know, and tell you guys about my story, but I didn't come knowing that all the things that I had done, because, you know, I don't know if you guys do this, but I lied to myself. You know, I look the other way and I pretend things didn't happen. At least that's me. Another thing that I did is that I always wanted to be somebody that I wasn't. So I always I'm the one that I've always lived a double life. I'm always doing things, you know, thinking that I'm somebody else. I can do that. I can do that drunk or sober. This is why I have to go to a lot of meetings and be under good sponsorship. My sponsor's name is Sharon Brooks, you know, and she's been my sponsor for the last 12 years. And I've been blessed with sponsorship. My sponsor prior to that was Lucretia, and she passed away, and she sponsored me for 9 years. And she was the apple of my eye. This lady is totally responsible for me growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. But so what happened to me in my first, those first meetings, I never went to a speaker meeting. You know, I only went to that participation meeting, went to one meeting a week. I don't advise that, new people. And so what happened was that God disguised himself as a cute guy. You know how that is. And he invites me to go play volleyball at the Lakewood speaker meeting. And so I went, but I didn't go to the meeting. I didn't want to go to the meeting. I wanted to go play, you know, volleyball. You know what I mean, Maggie? You know, volleyball, okay? And so here I am. I've lost in 9 months. I've lost all my bloat. I'm wearing my little hot short shorts, my little tube top. I'm ready to go play some ball. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean, Annette, right? And so here I am, and I would have to stay for the speaker meeting because if you leave, you know, it doesn't look good, and I like looking good, so I would stay for the meeting. And you know, in one of those times, I remember bringing cookies to make you think that I was a member, you know. And in one of those times, it was winter, it was raining, and a lady named Betty Garcia came, and she shared with me, you know, she shared with the room. And I'm there, and I'm not there waiting to change my life. I'm not there to get a sponsor. I'm not there for any other reason but to play volleyball. And this lady, out of nowhere, you know, she was a lot older than me. We had nothing in common except that we both dance on tables. And she's there, and she says from the podium that all she aimed in life was to be of maximum service to God and the fellows about her. And I heard that, you know, and she said the 7-step prayer and the 3rd-step prayer. And she ended her talk by reciting by the touch of the master's hand. And by the end of the meeting, I just wanted to go touch her garment. You know, I just wanted to follow this lady. And I went and I gave her my phone number, and I told her, I says, you know, Betty, I normally don't do this. You know, I never give out my number, but you can have it. Like, I was asking her out, you know. It's like, it felt really weird, you know. It's like, and so I gave her my number, and she called me the very next day. And what she said was, you know, would you come join me at my home group tomorrow morning, Saturday morning meeting at the Torrance Lomita Alano Club. And I was there the following Saturday, and I sat next to this lady, and I don't know what I expected. I just wanted to be next to this lady. And I can tell you guys that my life has never been the same since. This lady gave me a literature commitment right away at that meeting. I tried to tell her, this is Torrance. I live in Downey. There's no way I can come here, you know, every Saturday. It's a 20-minute drive, but I couldn't make that 20-minute drive. And she laughed out loud and gave me the keys. And I'm getting messages from people. I don't know if they're for me. And so what happened is that I took the commitment. She gave me the keys to the locker, and I didn't leave him at the bar of that Alano Club, and I didn't give him back to her. And I came back, and I was the literature person for the following 2 years, you know. And the following Saturday, you know, I see Betty, and she says, have you ever taken an inventory? And I said, you know, no. And she got all excited. You know, she started, she took me down to the bench that's down the street from that Alano Club. And she would sit me there every Saturday morning, you know, and she would read the big book out loud to me. And she would read things and repeat things. And she would look at things like, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of all your troubles. And she would stare at me like for 20 seconds, you know. It's like, who reads that way, you know, and why is she doing this? And why is she reading out loud to me? This lady must think I can't read, you know. Why is she reading it to me? You know, I didn't get it. And, but thank God I didn't do anything. Thank God that I didn't say anything. I kept coming back, and she kept reading to me. She told me how to do an inventory. She wanted my resentments, my sex, and my fear inventory. And then she said she wanted all my secrets. And I can tell you guys that it wasn't the big things on my inventory that kept me small. It was all the things in between my head. It turned out I had a lot of secrets. You know, I tried to commit suicide at the age of 10. You know, I was smuggled into the States, and I was a wetback in this country for many years. And what goes with that is not only the title of a wetback, but there goes a lot of bullying that goes with that. And I've always felt less than, even though I never told anybody, because we don't talk this way when we're out there. You know, we don't talk, you know, oh, gee, I feel less than, or oh, my feelings are hurt, you know. And when I was young, I got with the cholas, you know, I always wanted to be a chola, which is like a little gang member, you know, but it, I wanted to be, you know, I was never one. You needed to be jumped into a gun, to a gang, and I'm too chicken shit. I'm not gonna, you know, do that. And so, but what happened to me was that, here I am in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm doing this inventory, and I come to find out that, you know, I lived a lot in my head, and a lot of the things in between my ears were not really happening. You know, I just made a lot of stuff up. And I, you know, like that portion in the book where it says that we're in full flight from reality, I created my own misery. There was a lot of things that were not true. The big book tells me that I need to let go of all of my old ideas. And for me, it was hard to do that because I didn't know there were old ideas. I didn't even know that there were the ideas, things that never happened. You know, she broke it down to me, and I'm really grateful that she did. She laid a foundation for life for me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm really grateful to Betty, because I don't know that my quality of sobriety, because I have quality sobriety. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I am in the middle. I'm in the middle, and I try to do better every day. I try to be a better sponsor, a better sponsee, a better sister, a better wife. I want to be a better human being, you know, and this thing that's going on right now, you know, it's showing all of my ugly defects. You know, I am selfish. I am a hoarder. You know, it's like, I want more. Well, I wanted more before this happened. I've always wanted more. That's one of my biggest defects. But I can go into sloth, and I can go into self-centeredness rather quickly, you know, drunk or sober. I don't need to be drunk, you know, to misbehave and to live in self. You know, so this is me in a nutshell. I need every meeting that I attend. I need every service commitment that I have. So I wrote an inventory, and I gave her all my goods. And I can tell you that when I heard myself saying these things, you know, in my fifth step, and she started sharing with me, and she started explaining to me what my real fears were and my imagined fears were, because I never knew that. I was afraid of things that could never happen. And she broke that down to me, for me. And I'm really grateful for that. And so I did a thorough, you know, sex inventory that allowed me to, by the time I was to meet my husband in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was ready. My side of the street was completely clean. I had no baggage. And that was helpful. After I took the fifth step, she told me what to do with my sixth and seventh. And I can tell you that after I got up from my knees and taking that seven step prayer, I thought I was going to be the next Mother Teresa of Calcutta. I understood why my brother gave us all big books. I wanted to get the whole world sober in an AA. I understood. I felt clean. I felt white, you know, and so what happened, that lasted for about a week. I went back to that meeting that following Saturday, and she asked me to make a list of people that I thought that I needed to make amends. I did the list. I made the mistake of telling her in my fifth step that I had embezzled $7,000 from an ex-employer. So she looks at that list and she says, "Where's that employer?" You know, and I says, "What do you mean?" She says, "You told me that you had embezzled $7,000, you know." And so she wanted me to go make amends to that guy. And I'm like, no way. You know, it's like, I'm not coming back here. I'm going to start going back to Downey, you know. And every Saturday, you know, I always thought, oh, I'm not going to go, you know, because every Saturday she was asking me about that amends, you know. And she started telling me and teaching me to pray to become willing to make those amends, you know, because I didn't know anything about praying to be willing. You know, I have never been willing to do anything. You know, I've been working since I'm 14 years old, and you're not going to tell me what to do. I got sober at 29 years old. I'm 27 years sober today. I don't know if I said my sobriety date is July 5th of 1992. I do have one. And I have a home group, and then that's the Bellflower Big Book group. We meet every Monday night. And I already told you a little bit about my sponsor. So what happened to me, you guys, is that I reverted to my childhood God, and I started praying for me not to make those that amends, that 7 grand amend, because I thought I was going to go to jail. And I was afraid, and I started feeding the homeless with my nieces and nephews in the car. I did that for about 3 months, and I'm waiting for a sign. In sobriety, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a job, a real job, a decent job, where I was taking breaks and lunch. And in one of those lunches, during this 3 month period of time that I was feeding the homeless, waiting for a sign, I opened up the other good book that I like reading once in a while. And it opened up to the page where it says, before you come to my altar, make sure your debts are paid. And I knew I was screwed, you know, I needed to stop, you know, looking for the softer, easier way and in my will. And I remember going to the Downey old timers and asking them, can you believe that she wants me to, you know, do this? You know, I'm going to go to jail. I'm 2 years sober. I'm walking on water here. You know, I'm going to save the world. And thank God that none of the old timers said anything to me. You know, the old timers started teaching me that, you know, I needed to start trusting somebody. And a sponsor is a good way to begin, you know. And I didn't know anything about trust, you guys. I've never been trustworthy myself. So therefore, I was not ever going to trust anybody. You know, the closest people that I've had, they failed me, you know, growing up. So why would I trust anybody, especially strangers? Alcoholics Anonymous is really weird. You know, you've got this room full of 100 people here tonight and newcomers, you know, anybody in this room is willing to help you. Anybody's willing to, you know, give you a phone number and take you through the steps, even on the phone. You know, I had one of my girls tell me that she's reading the book, you know, over the phone with a newcomer. I'm like, wow, that's a great idea, you know, and then this is my sponsee, you know, telling me that was great. And so what happened, you guys, is that I finally, you know, surrendered to that amends. And I started saving some money for a down payment and a payment plan. And you know, I finally made the appointment to see my ex-employer, and I'm in the ninth step now, and I'm making amends. And the hardest amends that I've ever made was that $7,000 one, and I sat across from him. It was on a Friday morning. It was in Downey. It was at Foxy's. It was a restaurant there on Paramount. And it sounds very easy to tell you 25 years, you know, later in Zoom meeting in San Luis Obispo. But I can tell you that I was panicking. My legs were shaking, and I was crying. I really thought I was going to go to jail. I knew it was $7,000 because I filed taxes on that money. Don't judge me. And so here I am, and I tell him what I've done, and he's disappointed, and my legs are shaking, and I take out this cash money. He looks at the cash, and he looks at me and says, what are you doing? And I says, these people in AA are telling me that I need to pay my debts, otherwise I'm going to get drunk, you know. And by that time, I heard myself saying out loud, and I don't want to drink again. And for me, I marked that day, you know, coming to believe to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, because I genuinely did not want to drink again. And he looks at me and he says, you know, you out of anybody, you know, he goes, I can't take your money, Rosie. You out of anybody knows how many times my kids have broken into my own home and they've never come back and sat me down to tell me the truth. You out of anybody knows how many times my wife has been missing in action, and you know, she's never said anything. You know, I'll take a big book from my wife if you don't mind. And you and I can work something out in form of payment, you know, with work. And this man allowed me back in the same factory, same office, same computer to close out his books for him for free for a couple of years in my off time, you know, and I was able to do that. And I can tell you that actions like that is have put myself back together. I came to you broken, you know, I'm able to look the world in the eye, you know, and I flew to Florida to make amends to a niece that I had hurt when she was little. And that amends, you know, went south, you know, she, at the end of each amends, my sponsor says, you know, make sure and ask them if they have anything to share with you, if they want to, you know, add or say anything, you know? And so this young lady went to town with me. She said, you know, you're making amends for this, but you know, do you realize that, you know, this, you realize that you did A, B, and C, you know, and I didn't have that on my inventory because I'd forgotten. But when she said it out loud, I remembered and I owned it. And so I accepted the responsibility, you know, and she said, you know, I don't care what you're doing, you know, get out, you know. And I came back home and I told my sponsor that amends didn't work. And she said, no, listen, young lady, we're only responsible for cleaning our side of the street. And this is exactly what you've done. We move on to making living amends. And if there's anything good that you've heard from me tonight, you know, I am here to tell you that living amends, it's the reason why I have a great relationship with my family today. You know, and I wouldn't have thought that living amends is where it was, especially with family members. I was able to send, you know, Jackie Christmas cards and birthday cards and little gifts for her little kids. And at times, you know, I wouldn't have her address by her choice, and I would send all this stuff to my sister. And at that time, they lived in Florida, and now they live in Georgia. And I can tell you that once in a while, she would send me a hate email. I don't know what you do with a hate email, you know. I don't know what to do. I would send it to my sponsor. I figured it was her idea. Let her deal with it, you know. And, you know, my sponsor would say, oh, honey, just respond to her. I'm sorry you're having a bad day. Know that I love you anyway, you know, and thank God that I followed direction, that I never really, it's easier to follow sponsor direction. I'm going to set my timer here for 5 minutes. Sorry about that. It's easier to follow sponsor direction, because when I sent that to Jackie, you know, what I really wanted to do was send her a virus. You know, I mean, that's how I deal with people. You know, I mean, you don't like me, I just X you out of my life. I don't know how to communicate with people. I normally just, you know, kick you out of my life. I leave. I don't know how to talk about things, especially feelings. And about, I don't know, 17 years ago, Jackie calls me, and I'm waiting to hear the hate coming, because, you know, she would always say things, mean things to me. And I answer the phone. I was at work, and she said, you know, she called me an aunt for the first time in years. And she says, I'm calling to let you know that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, 9 months sober. And I'm calling to make my amends to you. You see, every time that I take a cake in AA, I send a letter out to my family members and some of my closest friends, and I to tell them what I've done the years past. And Jackie has been getting my letters for years. She says, one of the biggest things in my amends is my gratitude for you always, you know, keeping me in the loop. I've always known that you're sober, and I've always known that you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is how I came, you know. And to tell you the truth, we never know who we affect, right? We go out and we make amends, and we think that we're making amends for ourselves, but you never know who you touch. We never know who's looking, who's watching, you know, who's listening, especially little people in the home. You know, I don't have children, but I can tell you that, you know, a lot of the girls that I sponsor have children, and those little people are always listening. And so, you know, Jackie didn't get to stay sober, but she's got 7 years today. You know, I talked to her today, actually, and about 2 or 3 years ago, I went to Florida to speak, and she got a hold of the flyer. And she called me up. She says, I'm going to drive the 13 hours because I want to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with you, you know. Being the youngest of seven in my siblings, I was always called La Loca, the crazy one, you know, and I was never going to amount to anything because I was a nightclubber. I went to nightclubs, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week. And all of everybody in my family kind of knew that I was just out there. And you know, Alcoholics Anonymous not only has restored me to sanity, but it has restored me into my family. You know, I am somebody that they call to run things by. You know, whenever they have an important event like a wedding or a baptism, they call and check my calendar. You know, who does that? And this is the kind of member in my family that I am. Now, I am not always, you know, perfect. Not always. I'm not perfect. But I can tell you that I am in progress, right? Not too long ago, I was going to college because you told me that I could go to college. And I took an ethics class. And during the midterm, I forgot all my theories. So I copied a theory, you know, and I handed in my midterm. And I realized I had cheated in my midterms of ethics. And so I'm like, oh, my God, it was a Monday night. I'm like, immediately my head went into like, don't tell anybody, you know, it's not a big deal. Don't make a big deal. Don't make a fuss. You didn't get caught. Relax, you know, and I ended up, you know, telling my husband. He snitched me off with his sponsor right away, and I had to tell my sponsor, and my sponsor had to go face me with the professor, you know, and my professor looked at me like I had two heads, you know, when I told him that I had cheated on his midterm, and, you know, and then he came back with, you know, well, I'm really glad my class is helping you out. And so, you know, I am thinking, yes, sir, you know, I was not about to explain to him that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for me to cheat and lie means a drink down the line. And he allowed me to take a different test. He didn't kick me out of the class. And I'm just work in progress, you guys. I am here because I need you guys now more than ever. Please remember our anonymity. This could either make us or break us. And I hope we stay united. And I hope we're there for one another. Pick up the phone. Don't wait to see that you recognize the number. It is important that we're there for each other. I love you guys. Thank you for having me share with you guys tonight. My time is up. Thank you, Brenda, and thank you, Annette.
God.